Ayers, the Director of Communications at the Realtor Association of the Fox Valley, and welcome to the April edition of our panel series, Real Estate Experience Live. This is a series created by the RAFE Technology and Communications Committee, and the goal of this series is to tackle real issues in real estate with realtors. Our topic today is very appropriate for April. Fair housing is what we're going to talk about today. But before we get into the discussion, I'd like to say thank you to all of our panelists for taking your time to be here and educating us. And I would also like to thank everyone in the viewing audience for joining us. If you have any questions, be sure to put them in the chat box and we will get to them after the panel discussion is over. So be sure to stay on until the end. So let's get started. First, let me introduce our panelists. We are honored to have with us today 2021 President of Illinois Realtors, Sue Miller. She is the designated managing broker of Coldwell Banker Real Estate Group in McHenry. She is a member of the Heartland Realtor Organization in McHenry County and has served two terms as president of her local association and was twice named its local Realtor of the Year. And in 2017, Sue was honored as the statewide Illinois Realtor of the Year. Such a wealth of knowledge and experience. We are lucky to have you here today with your busy schedule. Please welcome Sue Miller.
Thank you, Lisa, for having me today.
Thank you. We also have Miguel Fernandez of HomeSmart Connect in Elgin. Miguel is RAFE's president-elect and has the unique experience of being not only a realtor, but also a real estate attorney. Please welcome to the panel, Miguel.
Thank you, Lisa. Thanks for this opportunity.
We also have Laura Boyer, who will serve as moderator and panelist today. Laura is a regional vice president with Coldwell Banker Real Estate Group and is based out of the Sycamore office. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you. Excited to be here with everybody today. Big topic. So ready to go. Are we ready?
Yeah, let's do
awesome.
It.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks, Sue and Miguel, for being here with me today. I think this topic today, while it does get highlighted in April every year throughout our realtor community, fair housing, and then in terms of inclusion and diversity is also a topic that should be top of mind throughout the entire year. I would like to start with a piece that I think Sue had said the other day, coming from Illinois Realtors. I think it's the most appropriate way to lead into this discussion. It is said fair housing is a critical component of Illinois Realtors' commitment to diversity and inclusion in creating and sustaining affordable and equitable housing in Illinois. Part of what we are going to do here today is to be part of the grassroots efforts to raise awareness about the realtor's role in fighting housing discrimination. So thanks again for being here. I hope we can touch on a few topics and it might lead into some extraneous conversation that I think our membership will find valuable that they can take into their day-to-day practice while serving their consumers and clients. So let's go ahead and get started. First question, with April being here, our Fair Housing Month, what would you say are the top resources our realtor members can use to educate themselves on this topic? Miguel, do you want to start?
So Fair Housing Month is in a reference to the Fair Housing Act, which is actually Section 7 of the 1968 Civil Rights Act. And fair housing complaints are actually run by the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and they're in particular their Fair Housing and Equal Opportunity Office. So HUD itself at HUD.gov has quite a wealth of information. NAR has a bunch of information on their website. I know Illinois Realtors do as well. And there's always the legal hotline with IR if you fear you're running into legal trouble with fair housing aspects.
Excellent. Sue, did you have any other resources you want to highlight?
Sure. I'm going to take it really back down to the education component and echo Miguel's thoughts that first and foremost, your education component, your continuing education, we always focus on fair housing and there are courses that are designed and developed around fair housing. So you're revisiting protected classes, you're revisiting the process of fair housing and getting to know and become familiar. Having conversations like this about fair housing are the perfect learning tool because it's not just rote memory. It's really implementing a process and changing your mindset about fair housing. NAR offers a trifecta that I call it, in the perfect training and thought process of changing your pattern in fair housing. The certification of At Home with Diversity is a 6-hour course that really talks about the history of diversity and being comfortable with being uncomfortable. And truly in that 6 hours, you talk about all the adversity that has happened in housing and how many different people have found it difficult to find their way to being homeowners. Fair Haven is a new simulation that NAR has created, which really tests your skills on navigating a simulated community and making good choices and working on behalf of your clients. I thought I was awesome at fair housing till I took the simulation and failed miserably. And I failed because I was making great choices, but they weren't the best choices in Fair Haven. So Fair Haven is a simulation that tests your skills. And then of course, last but not least, NAR has an amazing video called Overcoming Bias, which really talks about implicit bias and how each of us genetically has inside of us bias that we may not even be in touch with. So along with understanding where the genesis of fair housing came from, Miguel's thoughts and the laws that were created, you have to understand who you are and how to move that forward. So we've taken the legal aspect and we've done a lot of education training, and that trifecta, At Home with Diversity, Fair Haven, and the video Overcoming Bias together really start to shift your mindset and put you in a good place when it comes to talking about fair housing. So put it on your do list. Most of those products are available to you for free, if not free, at minimal cost during the month of fair housing through NAR. And they're great products to just put in your arsenal. It makes you think twice about the way you practice your real estate.
Perfect. Great. And we'll link to those resources, some of those videos and Fair Haven and those other things that you guys have mentioned. We'll put those in our description so that they can be easily accessed and referenced for everybody as well.
So on to our next question. Being a realtor myself, still doing a handful of transactions each year, which I like to do to stay in the know and to be in practice. I think it can help with credibility in a leadership role, but I want to be in touch with what's happening out there within our community as well. And I want to make sure that alongside things like that Fair Haven simulation, I want to do the best I can to make sure that I'm acting and treating all clients fairly in regards to fair housing as well. In my personal business and acting within those guidelines, what are the best practices I can implement? What is our best ideas on the day-to-day ongoing activities that we can do? Sue, do you want to start with that?
Absolutely. When I got this business back in the 80s, NAR had this form, and I'm dating myself. It was called an equal service report. And literally it was a form that said that you had at your desk. And when someone came to your office, again, archaic, people don't come to your office anymore, but when they walked in, it said, you know, did you greet them? Did you offer them coffee? Did you hang up their coat? Did you, you know, set them next to your desk? So it was a worksheet. It was a checklist that said, did you provide equal service to every person that you interacted with? The essence of the form is the essence of what we should be doing in practice. We should be providing the same service to every consumer we touch, whether that's on the internet, whether that's over the telephone, whether that's on our website, whether that's wherever we connect with them. So somehow as a practitioner, we need to provide a process, a procedure that we are providing equal service to all. And that's the most difficult part of our life because we don't know how we're going to touch them. We don't know how we're going to connect with them because often they connect with us before we ever connect with them. So how do you do that when they're coming in through a website or they're coming in through, you know, some place out on the internet that you haven't connected? So equal service to all is really about starting a process or a procedure where you are providing the exact same treatment or qualifier to every consumer that you touch. So again, everyone has the same service day in, day out. And that's tough because there are days you're tired. There are days you don't want to talk to them. There are days you don't want to be up, but that's not your choice. You signed up to be a realtor. You pick up the phone, equal service to all.
Excellent.
Michael? Yeah, no, Sue summed it up pretty well. And it goes back, I think, to the stuff that we learned, like, you know, in kindergarten and when we were kids. We were all pretty much raised to treat everybody with an equal level of respect. And then we start socializing, we start developing assumptions about people, and that kind of gets worn away. I think I was, when I was taking Fairhaven, that Fairhaven actually threw the golden rule back at me. You know, make sure that you treat everyone the way you would want to be treated. Problem with that, there's a little bit of implicit bias in all of us. So when we go from our own frame of reference, we start assuming things about other people. So it's like Sue said, make sure you treat everybody the same and treat everybody equally and provide the same level of comfort and service to everyone that you're dealing with and take them the way they approach you and don't make assumptions regardless of what your eyes are necessarily seeing or what you may think. You just have to kind of give the same process, make them feel equally welcome, provide them with the same forms. If you're going to require a pre-approval or something along those lines, make sure you're doing that for everybody and not adjusting based on assumptions you may have about certain people, which is tough. Because we're all human.
Perfect. Yeah. And you guys mentioned implicit biases. And I think that's something that, you know, I think in light of the last year, you know, for all of us, we've brought to light a lot of things in social inequities and things like that. And when we talk about implicit bias, that was new to me. And I had to do a little bit my own self-research there to see what that means. And I think when you do get into that Fairhaven simulation, you do start to realize where some of those come into play. So that leads me into one of our other questions, which I'm going to kind of bump up ahead here. There's resources out there that are promoted. We have apps that can help us, you know, find some information about folks that we may be meeting. We talk a lot about realtor safety, which is also very key in our industry. And we have apps that can help promote some realtor safety, where if we're going to meet a client at a house, if we don't meet them first in an office around other people, we can make sure, do they have any possible infractions on their record? Is it even accurate? There's apps like this out there, and some associations actually provide them to the membership. And I've heard our legal team at the state level say that we need to be cautious of using these apps to ensure that we use them consistently and while not discriminating in using these with all of our clients. So we'd have to use them the same, kind of like you're saying, Sue, with that form. You know, if you're going to use that app or that resource to screen a client to make sure you feel safe in entering a space with that person, you better be doing that for every single client. So do you guys have any tips to share on how to make use of these services without falling victim to our own implicit biases that we talk about here?
Laura, I'm gonna jump on this one first, and I'm gonna take off all the hats that I wear. So this is gonna be raw, organic Sue Miller. First and foremost, I'm all about realtor safety. 84 realtors were killed or injured in doing business last year in our industry. So first and foremost, you have to be safe. We, by the nature of this industry, put ourselves at risk doing our job. And it's the nature of the beast. So safety first, follow your gut, never put yourself in harm's way. Having said that, it's not that easy. So there are apps out on the planet that help us do some background on who we're meeting, because we meet strangers every day. That's the reality of our business. But going back to my earlier statement, it has to be consistent. You can't willy-nilly who you're looking into and who you're not looking into based on what they sound like, based on what they look like, based on the conversation you've had. So you really have to apply the process of all in or all out. You either have to do it to everyone or do it to no one. And there is no middle ground. You can't be, oh, I did it because he sounded weird, or I did it because I was going to meet him in the dark. There is no qualifier. It's all in, all out. So if you're not willing to do 100% in, you're 100% out. There's no middle ground. It's a process. It's a procedure. And when I'm out there teaching and training on safety, that's exactly what I'm saying. You're either at risk or you're not at risk. So it's 100% in or it's 100% out when you're looking at these apps. Frankly, you got to follow the crowd. I know that I sometimes will break the rules and not use the app. So unfortunately, I'm 100% out, because if I'm going to miss one, I can't miss one. I can't not do one and say, geez, I forgot, or, oh, I was busy, or, oh, I just happened to be around the corner and didn't have that app loaded that day. So you've got to commit to what you're doing, and you've got to make it 100% commitment. Now,
yeah,
safety, you got to have safe practices in place. So if you're not going to commit to a safety app, you got to have another process in place. Everybody needs to know where you are, what you're doing, who you're meeting. So you need to have, if you're not going to use a safety app, you need to have a procedure in place. You and I come from the same company. You know we have procedures in place. I happen to use a Google phone. Google sends every picture I have up to the Google cloud. I take pictures of people's license plates. That's another safety. If someone kills me, my assistant can see the license plate that I was with. That's a beautiful thing. But again, these apps are there, but you have to commit to them as part of your process. 100% in, 100% out. There is no gray area.
And what you said too, just, it brought to mind for me, Sue, that when you say in or out, black or white, it has to be that way. Even if, for instance, this was a referral from my past client who is also my cousin, and you trust your cousin's judgment, it doesn't matter. You, if you're going to be using these apps to do your homework, to feel safer and with whom you're meeting, it doesn't matter if it's a referral or it's a friend of a friend, or a stranger, you got to do it the same. So
you always have to think, if you're in court and the judge asks you, tell me your procedure, and you tell them they're your procedure, and the next follow-up question is always going to be, do you do that every time? If you say yes, you're good as gold.
Right.
The minute you stall, stammer, or say no, you've just opened the door of weakness.
Right.
Because you've shown that you don't consistently do the same thing every time. So it's 100% in or 100% out. And if you, by nature, and we all in the real estate world, we're always doing just-in-time stuff. There's never enough time in the day to do everything we're supposed to do. And if you have too much time, you're not busy enough. Keep prospecting. So if you're not willing to be 100% in, you can't put your big toe in the pond.
Yeah,
the trick is to not let your assumptions or your biases alter the way you do business. And, you know, realtor safety is important. We think that because we deal with a lot of strangers at odd hours, that we're at higher risk. But watching the news for a week straight will let you know that you're just as likely to be attacked by a family member or someone you know, or a friend, or a female, or a male, or everybody's, in reality, a threat. And so the key is to, like Sue said, set up a procedure and follow it every single time, and make sure that you're not considering things that you're not allowed to consider. Make sure you consult if it's a big brokerage, make sure you consult with their legal team or your managing broker. Because you're not supposed to necessarily be considering whether or not someone has an infraction or a possible infraction or what their criminal history might be before you meet them, or if you're taking a rental application or something along those lines. But if you're going to use the app, use it every single time. If you're going to bring a friend along because you're worried, make sure you bring it every single time, that just that your procedures are consistent and documented. We want everybody to protect themselves, but at the same time, we don't want them to wind up in a fair housing violation or some sort of a lawsuit because they got told them that this person was a little extra sketchy and they violated their practices.
Absolutely. I think too, especially in the market we're in right now and the pace of how quickly things are moving, it is more important than ever that we slow down. We still continue to do the same buyer process that we always do, even in a slower time. You have to stay true to those guidelines that you've set for yourself in maybe what would be a calmer pace for yourself and your business. You have to still, I like to say, slow down to go fast, like pump the brakes for a second, have that deep dive buyer consult, talk through the process, do the same procedures you do for every single buyer, and then go out and show properties. But to react, I think when you start to react to the market and you're reacting to buyers' needs quickly and you're jumping in the car and you're meeting them at houses, that's where you risk falling outside of your normal guidelines and your consistent procedures. And that's where you have to really be mindful, I think, especially in the market we're in right now too.
Well, and to add to that conversation, buyers are very aware in today's marketplace that speed is everything, and they're pushing that pace. So when we as a practitioner pump the brakes and say, hey, we need to have a conversation, we need to make sure you're pre-approved, we need to make sure that, we have our ducks in a row, they're resisting you. They're pushing back. So you need to understand that you have to stay true to your process. You have to stay committed to your A, B, C, D, because they're pushing back and they're going to push you out of your comfort zone. And the minute you're out of your comfort zone, you're going to cut corners. You're going to do things you wouldn't normally do. We call those bad actors, and you're going to wind up in front of a panel because you're going to break the code of ethics. Once you're out of your comfort zone, you're going to go, oh, gosh, well, all right, I'm already not playing by my set of rules. I'm going to just keep breaking the rules. And that's why we're seeing a lot of unauthorized access. We're seeing a lot of things going wrong on the buyer end, because buyers right now are pushing us out of the comfort zone instead of us controlling the scenario. So absolutely, Laura, you're right. Miguel, you're absolutely on the right track. Stay in control, set your procedures, stay in the box, and do our job effectively and correctly. We should never be out of control of the situation, regardless of the pace.
And I think it's okay when you start that conversation with the buyer and they are resisting you, when you're like, hey, I want to have this initial conversation with you. It's okay to say, listen, Mr. or Mrs. Buyer, whoever you are, I am aware that there are realtors out there that might jump in the car and run and start showing you homes. But just like you said, my goal is to do my job the best and the most efficient way that's going to get you the best results as well, while treating you fairly from the beginning to end. And I want to make sure you have that best service. And I think they can't refute that as much. So it's okay to acknowledge that there are people out there that might do what they're asking them to do, but it's also okay to say, here's why I'm not going to do it that way, and here's how this benefits you. So good points.
We have that conversation all the time about agency. And as managing brokers, we teach that at the first significant moment, you need to have the conversation about agency, and that every consumer has a right to be represented. And take the time, talk about agency, and that you're presumed to be the agent of the buyer unless you have a different relationship in writing. And often buyers will say, I don't want to talk about agency. Nobody else talks about agency. Why do you? And the most appropriate response is, one, I'm statutorily required to do that, and I'm a professional. You need to know you're represented. So I think applying it to our conversation here in Fair Housing, buyers need to understand that there's a procedure we need to follow. And that procedure allows them to be represented professionally, fairly, and equally. And once they hear those words, they get it, because that's what they want, even though they don't understand it. They want fair service. They want equal service. They don't want to be treated poorly. They want well treatment. So I think once they get it and they hear it, they will align with you and they will be your loyal fan forever.
I think that's perfect what you said there. It's like we all don't know what we don't know. And if we reference the media investigation that Newsday had done in 2019, it has highlighted definite violations in fair housing and ongoing discrimination within our professional community. And people, again, in those scenarios that are highlighted in that documentary, don't know what they don't know. And I think that is our part of our job is educators. We're educating the public, we're educating our clients, we're educating each other, part of what we're doing today, right? But that media investigation, it hits home because it's recent. It's not like this, we're talking about the history of why we've come to where we're at, but this is ongoing. And when we have these conversations with our clients and we share with them, like you said, we're gonna tell you how this should work, so that now you know and you can be protected, treated fairly, and we can go on with the professional service that you deserve, that everybody deserves. And that's great. Well, actually, I think we can link to that investigation too. I know most of our realtor members have seen it, whether in CE courses or within their offices and whatnot, but there's highlight reels, there's pieces of it, but there's a longer segment that we can share as well. But definitely, part of the reason we're having these conversations in ongoing fashion today, when you see something like that comes out. Shifting gears a little, newer topic that's come up when we talk about treating everybody fairly, we've seen a more of a rise in emotional support animals, and not just emotional support, but any service or support animals that we have out there. It's a newer trend. And I want to quote, according to Illinois Realtors, a person with a service or emotional support animal cannot be denied housing on that basis. The landlord or property manager could face a fair housing complaint case. And this is what I think is interesting, this next part. A service or emotional support animal, when it comes to housing, is not a pet. And that was news to me as well. So therefore, no pet policies and pet deposits do not apply in these scenarios. So the landlord or property manager can charge the terminating tenant for any actual damages caused by the animal after the fact. So do you guys have any personal experience with this yet? Any clients or personal, your own properties or through the legal end, Miguel? How do we best advise our realtors and the clients with rental properties in regards to rental applicants with emotional or support service animals?
I don't have any personal experience. I've heard a bunch of stories, but the emotional support animal, it's an extension of the Americans with Disabilities Act and that portion of the fair housing that we can't discriminate against people with disabilities of some nature. So it's not a pet. It's the same as, you know, a cane or a wheelchair or some other, you know, that kind of accommodation for someone. And it's on the landlord to make reasonable accommodation or possibly a reasonable modification to the house or the apartment that they're looking to rent out. And as the landlord, as the one sort of putting themselves in that space to offer housing, the court's going to kind of put the onus on them to accommodate the the customer, the client. It's just the perspective that I would offer. Sure, Sue has more to share from her own personal experience.
Thanks, Miguel. I am a landlord, so I do run into both service animals and emotional support animals in the process of procuring tenants for properties. And probably the most important piece of the puzzle for me is familiarity with the Illinois Assistance Animal Act. And what that act provides is that landlords can ask for actual documentation and the reason or the need for the animal. The documentation must come from someone with a therapeutic relationship with that tenant. and that therapeutic relationship must be from a physician or a medical professional, a mental health provider, or a third-party agency that is valid, like the VA, if there's a post-traumatic stress issue. It can't be just a certificate provider that does not have an assessment accreditation. So it can't be an internet-created certificate. It has to be a therapeutic relationship. The documentation, once provided, must be in writing. It can't be just this willy-nilly piece of paper. It must describe the disability that is creating the need and must describe the animal. So it very much assists the landlord in what the animal does, describes the animal and the disability, and is within the realm of the landlord's discretion. So you have the ability to say, please provide documentation of your requirement to have an assistance animal. And you'd be surprised when you ask, and I provide a copy of the Illinois Assistance Animal Act with the ask, how many people go away. Because it either is an illegitimate assistance animal, like we got it certified on the internet, or I'm trying to bring my happy pet with me to a no pet property. So if you understand the laws, like Miguel said, you actually have ADA service animal laws, and you now have an Illinois Assistance Animal Act. If you understand your rights as a landlord under those laws and what you can and cannot ask for, it really gets much simpler in screening your tenants. You put the onus back on them. Ask for the documentation. If they provide it, you cannot deny them access to the housing. Again, then it goes back into they become one of the pool. Your process of picking the right tenant for that property, they just become one of the many. And if they rise to the top, you cannot deny them based on the fact that they have a service or emotional support animal. But I always go back to the Animal Assistance Act and say, show me your documentation. And a lot of times that flushes them right out.
So that leads me to another question. Is there a resource or a way in which a landlord or owner can check the validity of what they're provided in writing from those potential tenants? Can they call on that professional that wrote it, like a personal reference? Can they call that provider and say, I just want to verify that you did indeed provide this certificate or, you know, valid agreement for this support or service animal with this person? Can you do that? Do we know?
I believe that you can. You cannot do a deep dive into the diagnosis, but you can verify the validity of the, it's a prescription for the animal. So just as if you were Walgreens verifying the prescription for amoxicillin, you can verify that that's a physician's office. It should be on a prescriptive pad. I can call them and say, did you write a prescription for an emotional service animal for Laura Boyer? Yes, I did. That's all I need to know. Thank you very much. It wasn't something created. It wasn't falsified. It wasn't a made up document. I can't do a deep dive into the diagnosis. I can't do a deep dive into the document, but I can certainly verify its validity.
Perfect. Good. All right. I only have one final question for you guys that we could kind of close out with. And then if everybody would just hang on a moment, we'll after we complete the questions, we'll stand for questions that you guys have put in the chat and we'll address those as well. So just a final wrap up, what can we do to test our knowledge and to challenge ourselves to be better practitioners on a day-to-day basis in regards to fair housing? Miguel, Sue, you guys, either one can jump in.
You know, if you haven't already, definitely go on the NAR's website and go through Fairhaven, because I went through it. And like Sue said, you're kind of surprised by the fact that you're giving technically wrong answers. It's not the best answer. You have to allow for the fact of how it is. It's a simulation with its own limitations. I know in my practice, I generally go at the client's request. So I don't necessarily push an issue that might lead to a HUD complaint if the buyer is just focused on finding a house and doesn't want to follow up on it. But you don't have that interaction, but it definitely opens your eyes to your thought process and putting yourself in somebody else's shoes and eliminating some of those biases whenever you deal with people.
Yeah, and I would echo Miguel. I took Fair Housing or Fairhaven twice. I took it once late in the night and failed miserably because I was just trying to get through and pick the right answer and process. And it didn't go so well. And the next morning I said, I'm going to do this again because I can do better at this. And I paid more attention and I picked the right answers. And as Miguel said, they try to trip you up and they try to get you to think outside the box and try to think as an advocate for your client and push the envelope. And it's not how we function. We work on behalf of our client. We follow our client's lead, and the simulation has you doing things you wouldn't necessarily do in day-to-day practice. So Fairhaven really opens your eyes to some of the things that you could be doing that we don't necessarily do. The second thing I think I would add to that conversation is take a introspective look into your own biases and have a better understanding of who you are. Because I think we all have implicit bias and we may or may not be in touch with it. And it raises its ugly head when you least expect it. So, you know, take some personality exam and understand who you are. Get in touch with that to be more transparent and more authentic with who you are and make strides to be a better human. Before we started this recording, we started talking about Statement 29 and the implication of being a better person all the time, not just when you're on the clock. And I have to give a great shout out to Matt DeFonis, the chair of professional standards this year for NAR, who led that charge and really got that task done with expanding Statement 29, which really says that all of your behavior, not just your behavior as on the clock behavior, it applies to all that you do. So I really think that when you put that hat on as a realtor, you need to be a good person 24/7, 365. And all of the things that you say, do, act, behave are being judged or can be judged. So be the best you can be. Be the best every day, every minute of every day, because that's what's expected of you when you wear blue. That's what we hope you do.
Sue, Miguel, I just want to give you an opportunity for any closing thoughts or things you'd like to leave with our viewers today. Anything you'd like to share?
Just sort of an extension of what Sue was talking about last. It kind of goes back to integrity and that it's really near impossible to be one person on the clock and be a completely different person off the clock. So we've kind of got to check ourselves and make sure that we're being our best selves as much as possible.
Fabulous. All right, Sue, any final thoughts from you?
I do. We are advocates every day and not just April Fair Housing Month. So as I reach out to each of you at the Realtor Association of Fox Valley, I ask that you be an advocate every minute of every day, of every week, of every month, of every year, not just April. We need to step it up and think of fair housing always, not just today in April. So thank you for being an advocate every minute, every day, every week, every month, every year. Thanks.
Thank you guys. Thanks for being here today. And hold on just a moment. We'll get to your questions.